This is Galesburg's Evening News on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson at Prairie Players Civic Theater because, once again, I got talked into helping with another performance, and this is kind of a big deal, really. It's the directorial debut of Scott Rasso, who is directing The Who's Tommy, which is playing this weekend and next here at Prairie Players. You're not nervous at all, are you?
No, I don't think I'm nervous. I'm just, I think when it comes to Tech Week, which we started this weekend, everybody gets a little on edge because this is when the show finally comes together. That's when all the pieces of the puzzle form to make the entire picture, so to speak. And it's just, it's a lot of things happening, a lot of moving parts that must come together. The cast must all peak at the same time. The band must be added. All the technicians' jobs, deadlines have been completed, and this is where the show really begins to look like the final product.
I want to go back to about a little more than a year ago. The first play I helped with for Prairie Players was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And you could not stop talking at that point about how you wanted to do this play at this theater. And you didn't even really know me at that point.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, that was over a year ago. That was November 2018. And I had gone out to dinner after one of the shows with the cast, and I was sitting by our director, Missy Roberts. We went to Iron Spike, and she had asked if I had ever considered directing. And I hadn't, but as soon as she said the word directing and implied that I could do it, this show popped into my head. I've actually had it. I've been in love with the show for more than 20 years, 8,540 some days, actually, and don't ask me why I know that. But this show has been a big part of my life, and I discovered it at a very impressionable time, and it's been very therapeutic to bring it to life. It's been, I mean, I've made some wonderful friends throughout the show. I've learned a lot about myself as a person, as a father, as a man, as a director, of course, being my first time. Just going through the pre-production process, the casting, finding the right people to do it, and in some cases, the right people finding me and asking if they could be a part of the show, which is a blessing in itself. But yeah, it's been more than 20 years in the making.
And you've acted in a number of plays for here and elsewhere, and I imagine that as an actor versus a director, there probably are things that you didn't even realize happened on the director's side of things, right?
Yes, absolutely. When you're an actor, I don't want to say it's easy because it takes a lot of fortitude to get in front of a crowd and speak memorized lines and do practiced motions. But when you're a director, you have to start at absolute, ground zero, and you have a completely blank slate, and you're given this libretto that you have to, or a screenplay or whatever, or not a screenplay, but a script, I should say. And you get to be responsible for really bringing the action to life and planning every little detail that every little character has to do, from what they look like to as far as makeup and hair and costumes, and from what the set will look like to how the sound will be designed to the lighting procedures and, not to mention the actual blocking or the movements of the play. The dancing, of course, because I also do the choreography. But for a lot of those other things, I'm definitely not an expert. So I found some wonderful people to do the costumes, do the hair and makeup. And I've had some wonderful people find me as far as the musicians and the set designer. So I've been very fortunate to have the right group of people to help bring the story to life.
So what have you learned about yourself becoming a director?
Well, I've learned that my gut is usually right. When it comes to making...
You could host a talk radio show by the way.
Well, that'd be fun. Stevenson and Rasso in the morning. I like
That's it. Not what I said.
I'm not doing it without you, though.
Oh, fine.
Yeah. So, I've learned that the gut is usually right. I've learned that you have to plan. I mean, that was nothing I didn't know before, but it was just kind of reinforced. As much as I thought I knew the show from being, because I came across it first when I just graduated high school. And... I thought I knew the show very well, but it turns out there are some angles and some little nuances and little things that are hidden in the script or hidden in the score that you don't really notice until you actually get the book from the theater company and you study it and you analyze it and you try to bring it to reality. And the interesting thing about our script is there are some pretty outrageous cues, which I know you've seen,
mm-hmm.
as far as the sound effects that are required. And there's supposed to be an exploding pinball machine. The narrator's supposed to fly in from up above. And here at Prairie Players, we have a black box theater, so we don't really have the capability to blow up a pinball machine. We don't have fly space or wing space to have these grandiose set pieces. We have a room that's essentially kind of an all-purpose facility that we have to build a place for a band. We have to have a place for an audience. We have to have some creative lighting and that. So it's not like putting a show on in a big space like, say, the Orpheum or at Galesburg High School. The black box gives you limitations and challenges, but I think that I would like to think that I have taken those in stride and have used the talents of the other artists involved in the show to the best ability in kind of just using the space that we have and using the look of what the theater already looks like. For instance, the bricks on the sides of the theater give it a very unique look. So the set designer has also, his name is Craig Choma. He's a professor at Knox. He's also designed some of the set pieces to look like, well, I don't want to give it away, but it looks like it belongs in downtown Galesburg. You know, just the colors and the textures and things like that. You really have to come see them to experience it completely. But yeah, those limitations and challenges have been frustrating to say the least, but it's forced us to be resourceful to find a way to make it happen.
Let's talk about, in the few minutes I have left now, the story itself. I think a lot of us have heard most of the elements of what would be the soundtrack to Tommy by The Who, Pinball Wizard perhaps being the most recognizable of those things, but talk about the story behind all this. This is a pretty heavy story at times.
Yes, this is a rock opera is what it's called, and it was an album written, I think it was the fourth album released by The Who in 1969, so it's a little over 50 years old, and it's a story, it's an album that really saved their career from what I've read or what I've heard from Pete Townsend. And it's, I guess, the difference in a concept album or a rock opera is that rather than just being a bunch of songs that are unrelated on one record, it's meant to be listened to in order. So it has a story, a sequence to it that you have to kind of follow. And it's all about this character, Tommy, who witnesses a traumatic event when he is a four-year-old. And it kind of shocks him into a psychosomatic coma, if you will. So he's kind of stricken deaf, dumb, and blind. So he can't see, he can't hear, he can't speak because of this trauma that he's witnessed. And the story kind of follows him from being, it actually starts before he was born and goes on to him coming out of it as a teenager and becoming this pop icon similar to Justin Bieber or Billie Eilish. And it's just the kind of the rise and fall, or maybe the fall and rise of an American dream, I guess.
And along that same line, if you're looking to come see this show, you should probably know that based on what you just heard from Scott, there are some pretty serious situations here that you might want to think about before you consider purchasing a whole family load of tickets, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. The script is very explicit in the fact that we do depict different types of violence. Like, for instance, there's an instance of domestic abuse. We have child abuse, several instances of child neglect, molestation, drug use, alcoholism. There's some profanity. And I didn't want to water down the story because I feel like we have to present these as they are, because these are the realities of some children in the real world. And so this is not the typical show you'd want to bring your family to. I would suggest high schoolers could probably handle it, okay, as long as and any good theater patron should read a synopsis of a show beforehand and understand what they're getting into. There are several trigger warnings in this show, which I've already mentioned, and I've been kind of talking about them and helping the cast process the effects of those and how we are depicting it on the show. It being a rock opera, though, it's set to music and it's constant action, so we have to be abstract and artful, I will say. So it's almost like we're using sleight of hand and a little bit of stage magic to bring some of these things to life. But there are very real issues that many kids, even in our community, face today. And I think that's the larger issue. This is an opportunity for us as a theater, as a community, to have these conversations in the public sphere.
Talk about your cast now. You have some really amazing people doing some really amazing things in this show.
Amazing. Yeah, that's one of the songs is Amazing Journey, and the show has been nothing short of that. It's really been, I mean, from day one, from the moment that I realized that Prairie Players, the board, accepted my proposal for the show, it's just been a roller coaster of emotions and everything. So I started with assembling the team, and then from that point we planned auditions, and I had just some amazing people come through and sing and dance for us. I did precast a few roles because of the content of the show. For instance, my son, Raphael, he's playing 10-year-old Tommy.
I should back up here for a minute because there are three Tommies at three different age points in this production.
There are actually four because we have a baby Tommy, but
that's right.
It's a prop. It's a prop.
So I forgot that a prop was the first star of Tommy here.
Yeah, so we've got three different Tommies. We have Tommy at age four, who is played by Maxwell Newman, who is actually the son of Captain Walker, Matt Newman. My son Raphael is playing the 10-year-old Tommy, and then Logan Trigo from Monmouth is playing the narrator, the older Tommy, the teenage hero Tommy.
That's fantastic, and you've got a whole great amount of supporting cast here too. I was having a conversation yesterday because I think she feels the way about herself that sometimes I do about me. I feel about the Acid Queen and how amazing of a song that is that she's able to belt out.
Yes, yeah. Erin Darling plays the Acid Queen. We've got Corgan Bell. Corgan Ball. Excuse me. I have to mention as Mrs. Walker. She stole my heart at the audition, and she is just perfect for this role. And there are everybody in this, we've only got, 15, 16 people in the show. So every one of them kind of has a principal role, whether it's moving set or singing behind the curtain or actually performing the action in front of the lights. There's not really a lot of downtime for anybody because that's one of the other things I like about community theater is that you have to do a lot of different roles. Okay. And that doesn't limit itself to those of us working behind the scenes. That's also those that are in front of the lights on the stage.
All right, I'm short on time, so let's talk about performances pretty much this weekend and next, correct?
Yes, we're Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We have evening performances on Friday the 21st, Saturday the 22nd, and then a matinee Sunday the 23rd. So those are 7:30 curtain times and then 2 o'clock curtain time, and then we're off for a few days. And then the following weekend, we are February 28th, 29th, Friday, Saturday night at 7:30, and then March 1st, because this is a leap year, Will.
Yes.
So March March 1st, we have a matinee. And I'm hoping we can fill this place to get the cast, the audience that they deserve.
All right, and I will tell you that you can go to the community events page of WGIL.com to find a link to purchase tickets from Prairie Players. And anything else we should know about the show, Scott? This is, again, despite the seriousness of this production, I've really loved watching this come together.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I think the most important factor for me was that I was only going to do the show if we had live music. I never once thought about having recorded music for this, even though we're doing the musical inside Prairie Players, which is our small black box. It would only work for me with live music. So I haven't mentioned Bob Fornender yet. Bob put together a band, and they've been practicing, and they just I sit here and I get goosebumps just listening to them play. So it's going to be a rock concert meets a silent film, if there is such a thing.
That's fantastic. Scott Rasso, the director of The Who's Tommy, performing this weekend and next at Prairie Players Civic Theater. Thanks again, and best wishes, break a leg, and it's been fun being a part of this.
Thanks, Will. I'm glad you're a part of it as well.
I don't know. I'm just a kid trying to earn a living and just trying to help the other kids out. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Let's do it again.
All right. Thanks so much. Stay tuned. We will have Kim Komando in sports as soon as I run about a block and a half down the street to get back to the studio for the rest of Galesburg's Evening News on WGIL.